Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for Monday, the 22nd of September, 2025. I know it's a Monday, but it's going to be a very good show today because a lot of very interesting things have happened. I'm joined by Nate and Ferris, and today we're going to be talking about the grandiose Charlie Kirk Memorial and some of the reactions to it, how we have decided to recognize Palestine, which I'm sure is going to be a very level-headed thing that people are going to respond to, and some good news that the British Defence League is actually in control of the country underneath, and we are calling the shots. Actually, if you don't, I don't know whether you've noticed, but the dialectic is being cranked in the right's favour, and we're getting what we want from basically everyone, which is wonderful, and I like to see it. So before we get started, this will be the very last week Island of Fort is on sale for, so get it while you can at shop.lotusseats.com, because otherwise you're going to have to go to eBay, because we are not reprinting them. We will have some that we might put on sale, like live events, from our own personal stocks of it, but it's going to be a pain to get afterwards. You have to pay hundreds of pounds on eBay, and you will regret not getting it. So anyway, right, let's begin with Charlie Kirk's memorial service, but we have the wrong thing up there, Samson, so I'll let you get that up. So obviously, after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, it's been 12 days now, and it was 11 days on the day of the memorial yesterday, and it's definitely changed the United States. All of my American friends, I don't want to say radicalized, that's not the right word, because their opinions haven't changed. They're still exactly the kind of Republicans that they were before. They're still, you know, pro-America and all this sort of thing. But the willingness to concede is the thing that has changed. I've seen them become a lot more entrenched in their position and say, you know what? No, I am right, you are wrong, and I'm not even going to entertain what your argument is against my position at this point.
So it's affirmed their conviction then?
Yeah, it's a deep sort of retrenchment in the right, and a unity in the right, which I haven't actually ever seen before. The closest I think that we got to it was the initial campaign of Donald Trump, actually, where he was battering his way through all of the old Republicans, the rhinos, and casting them into the pit of Hades, which was great. But yeah, so there's a huge amount of really positive energy which surrounds this memorial for Charlie Kirk. As you see, this is people, tens of thousand people. It was held in Phoenix, Arizona. And tens of thousand people were just standing since 4 a.m. because otherwise you weren't going to get into the stadium. Wow. And I just want to, I mean, this is just, like, obviously you had millions of people watching it online, you know, like when I tuned into it, there was something like 600,000 people watching live on just the YouTube stream, and then it's being streamed everywhere else, and you can see the stadium there. I mean, this is just absolutely packed.
It's being watched in France.
It's being watched everywhere.
It was being broadcast in France late at night, and people were watching it there.
Yeah.
So
and so it's and like, you know, it's just all over the place.
Wow.
All over the place. And so you've got, you know, a huge unifying experience for the American right going on, which is really interesting, because I don't think anyone expected this to be as, I mean, I know one expected this to happen, but, and everyone in their moment of grieving, they weren't sort of projecting themselves into the future. Everyone was very concerned with the here and now, thinking, oh my God, look what's happened. But this has really just drawn everyone together, because, and there were people who were critics of Charlie Kirk from the right, obviously. I mean, lots of people critical of him from the right. But that's all fallen away at this point. No one cares about the doctrinal differences they had on any individual issue with Charlie Kirk. What matters is he was one of ours, and they murdered him. And that's it. That's the end of the story, right? He was the debate guy who wanted to talk to you, who actually cared about your opinions, and you murdered him. So forgive us if we don't care about your opinions, we're not interested in talking to you, is the attitude of many right-wingers in America at the moment. Anyway, so you had snipers on the roof protecting the crowd, because unfortunately that's a dire necessity, isn't it, in America? Mm. Now, just as a quick thing, I don't know about any of the conspiracy theories about Charlie Kirk's death, and I'm not inclined towards conspiracy theories, so I'm just going to go with the official narrative as it stands at the moment. It was a deranged leftist with a 306 rifle or something that shot him from a rooftop. And so, unsurprisingly, they have to make sure their roofs are covered because America is no longer a safe place. And the thing is, it's not the only leftist shooter in recent days. In the last week, there have been three. So, anyway, moving on. Like I said, this is a unifying experience for the right. Here's Elon and Trump at the service, sat next to each other, which is, you know, a nice thing to see, especially after they've very publicly beefed. There's a photo of them shaking hands.
I saw that.
Not in that clip. After they very publicly beefed and call each other all sorts of mean names. In the wake of this experience, it's really made the small differences, the sort of the vanity of the small differences fall away and seem far less important, because actually it could be you tomorrow.
Martyrdom is a fundamentally unifying thing. That's why the Catholics say that the blood of martyrs is the seed of the church. So this is what happened, and you rally around your martyrs and you put aside your small differences and you try to figure out, okay, there are people trying to kill.
Yes.
How do we deal with them?
It's interesting, isn't it? The radical left, how sort of brazen they were to state when all of this happened. There were numerous that were saying, oh, well, you know, he'll never go down as a martyr. Yeah. Quite literally.
Well, we'll get to those in a minute, if that's all right. Because I'm going to go through those in a minute. Because very rarely have I heard a take that wrong.
Yes.
Anyway, as you can see, they had to give their speeches in Charlie Kirk's memory from behind bulletproof glass. And it is not in any way an exaggeration to say this was a very reasonable precaution to take.
Absolutely.
It's
such a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, it
like
is.
We shouldn't have to live like that, and we didn't have to live like that. Like, this is a relatively new phenomenon, and it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic. It's a choice as well.
Like,
it is a choice.
Yes.
But it is, unfortunately, the reality of political discourse in America at this point. So, I don't blame them at all for giving their speeches from behind bulletproof glass. So let's go through some takes that people gave, some notables. Elon Musk was asked by a journalist what his opinion was.
Why was he killed?
He was killed because his words made a difference. Because he was showing people the light, and he was killed by the dark.
Thank you, sir.
It was quite an emotional sounding piece there, but I think Elon really did hammer it correctly there. Like, he was killed because his words were making a difference.
Yes.
If his words didn't make a difference, he wouldn't have been such a hate figure for the left, and they would have just ignored him or laughed at him.
And if he was the truth, right?
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
And if his words did not bring light, they would not be that angry.
Yes. Mm.
The sort of demonic forces of the left would not be that angry and would not be reveling in his death in the way that they did until there were consequences.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's illustrative of a few incidents that have happened throughout the last couple of years. Libs of TikTok, I mean, all they did, for instance, was just show insane videos and go, look how mental this person is.
And she's a hate figure of the left now, yeah.
Yeah, she got doxxed. People tried to, you know, attempted murder and things like that. And that's the thing, right? Like, the truth hurts these people.
Exactly.
That was what Charlie Kirk.
That's what makes them creatures of the dark. That's what makes them creatures of the dark.
And that I like the light dark motif here as well, because it's very much the left's modus operandi to censor, as in I want to make sure that people aren't aware of who you are, what you think, and any consequences that follow from that. Whereas the right has always been like, look, I'll show you my enemy. Here's my enemy. This is the stupid thing they say. This is the repulsive creatures that they are. And so it very much is the sort of light dark motif being played out just in the general political environment, which I have to say I really do quite like it. Tucker's speech was deeply Christian. Now there's a particular clip of him talking about the Pharisees and how they killed Jesus to silence him, which has been going around, and everyone's like, ah, this is anti-Semitic. And it's like, well, I mean, he's speaking about a particular event that is documented in the Bible by specific people.
Exactly.
Who took specific actions. Mm. He's not abstracting that into an entire class of people.
And frankly, I'm sick and tired of being told that Christianity must always be in a defensive crouch.
Yeah.
and afraid of what others will think? No, Christianity is true, everybody else is wrong. That's the end of that discussion.
Well, that's definitely the opinions of Christians. But Tucker gave a deeply Christian speech, actually, if you listen to more of it. And I'm going to play a little bit of it. Because Tucker, I'm always amazed at just how good a public speaker Tucker is.
Yes.
He doesn't have a script, he just goes up there and he sits there just... Not even riffing, just explaining what he genuinely thinks. And it comes out like poetry.
...of what we've known for 2,000 years, which is any attempt to extinguish the light causes it to burn brighter. Every single time. So as we proceed into whatever comes next, and clearly something's coming next, remember this moment. Remember being in a room with the Holy Spirit humming like a tuning fork. This is the way. Right here. This is the way. And that is what Charlie Kirk was saying underneath it all. Thank you. And God bless.
So, I mean, you can see that he's just a superb rhetorician. And obviously, the whole thing was very, very deeply Christian, which is what one would expect. J.D. Vance gave a very mature and manly speech, I thought. We'll play a clip of it as well, because I particularly enjoyed it. The thing is, J.D. Vance there was a risk of him coming off a bit too strong, mm-hmm. actually. It could have gone down poorly if there wasn't such a nice energy in the stadium.
Better to die a young man in this world than to sell your soul for an easy life with no purpose, no risk, no love, and no truth. Christ told us in the Gospel of John, I have said these things to you that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but take heart. I have overcome the world.
So again, strong stuff. It's better to die a young man in this world than sell your soul for an easy life with no purpose, no risk, no love, and no truth. But I agree. That's the thing. I fundamentally agree. You know, so someone might say, well, this is a bit insensitive at a funeral or something. It's like, well, I think Charlie Kirk would agree with that, actually.
Well, exactly. I guess I see what you're saying, but I mean, he's actually applauding Charlie, isn't he, for saying?
Well, of course he is. Yeah.
That you know, he lived a.
Of course, but you know what I mean? It could be interpreted differently. I wouldn't, obviously, but
I mean, if at a funeral the best thing you can say is that his life and death had great meaning.
Yes. Mm.
And obviously, this is a man whose life and whose death had enormous meaning. Mm. The fact that this became a religious celebration, again, is a sign that it is, in fact, martyrdom.
Yeah, it is. That's absolutely true. If anything, it would be hard to describe this as not a martyr's death.
Precisely.
I don't even know how you would go about making the argument. Then you had the speech from Erica Kirk, who decided that she would, in proper Christian fashion, forgive her killer. And this was shared a lot.
Father, forgive them, for they not know what they do. That man, that young man, I forgive him.
So it's at this point that I have to break with my Christian friends. everyone knows that I have many Christian friends. I'm an ally of Christianity. But I wouldn't forgive him. I would drag him around the walls of Troy from a chariot, displaying his body. I'm a lot more pagan on these things, I'm afraid. People who do terrible things deserve terrible things to happen to them. And I think I would be quite happy to do them myself as a restoration of justice. Explain to me why that's wrong.
The two are not in any way in conflict.
Okay.
The two are not in any way in conflict. You, as a Christian, you punish him not out of animosity towards him, but because justice demands that, and because the order of society demands that. And so there is no conflict between personal forgiveness and the state delivering justice, including the death penalty. Mm. These two, like, there's a sword in Germany that keeps making the rounds on X.
I've seen it.
Which sort of states that I hope that this helps get him into heaven.
Yeah, may the sinner be given eternal life.
May the sinner be given eternal life, exactly. So there is no conflict between wanting justice and you personally loving your enemy and choosing to forgive.
Yeah.
The mistake is wanting one but not the other, is wanting only retribution or wanting only forgiveness without any retribution. And obviously the condition for the murderer to go to heaven is his genuine repentance. When you go to confession, it's not confession, it's the sacrament of reconciliation. The first part of the sacrament is the confession. You admit that you've done wrong. You admit it in good conscience, in good faith, with genuine repentance. Therefore, you get forgiven and you are absolved of your sins. Mm. But it's not one or the other. And so I don't see a contradiction between Erica Kirk's personal forgiveness and the demand of justice that this man hang.
Yeah, but I'm not, like I said, I'm not a Christian. I don't love my enemies.
Well, a different perspective would be you can forgive someone, but it doesn't mean you have to forget.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I'd even want to forgive. I'm actually very much more with Donald Trump on this. He had a take that very much resonated with me.
In that private moment on his dying day, we find everything we need to know about who Charlie Kirk truly was. He was a missionary with a noble spirit and a great, great purpose. He did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponent. And I don't want the best for them. I'm sorry. I am sorry, Erica.
Well, I think we're being confused about two kinds of bests for them.
I think I just love Trump when he talks. It's just so funny.
It just sort of shows that the guy isn't acting.
No, Trump's not an actor.
Yeah.
That's just the most Trump statement in the world. So, oh yeah, yeah, he's a good guy. He loved his enemies. I don't. I hate my enemies. This is quintessentially Trump. So I can't.
So let me put it to you this way.
In front of millions of people, like hundreds of millions of people watching this, and Trump's like, yeah, no, I hate my opponents. I don't want the best for them. Fuck those guys. Sorry, come on.
There are two kinds of I want the best for them. I don't want my opponent to have a job where he has power over me.
Obviously, yeah.
Or I don't want him to have a position where he can keep on destroying society, as the left has been doing.
Yeah.
But what is genuinely best for him is the salvation of his soul and therefore his repentance. And so therefore some punishments in this world that might push him towards regret are actually good for him. And in that sense, I want the best for him. The key point, I think I sent you that very long Aquinas quote, that it is not being done with a spirit of malice towards the person. It is done with God at the center, and part of what God is justice. Mm. So it is just that people who celebrate killing people for political disagreements, when there's absolutely no need for that, be faced with enormous punishment in this world, because it might help them repent and save them in the next world.
Yeah, I just want them strung up. I'm going with malice.
Because you don't think about the next world, but that's a different
I don't, you're right, but I'm going with malice in this world. Anyway, so yeah, like you got people who are like, oh, I'm glad he's dead because he's not a martyr. This video came out the day that Charlie Kirk was shot.
The best part of this whole goddamn thing is that he is not martyr material, so his death will mean nothing. It will activate no one. It will impact few. It's just great.
I mean, I also just how what terrible take.
But yeah, the wrongest take ever.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. But what an awful individual. I mean, I keep going back to the sort of celebratory left in this.
Yeah.
It's truly awful just how desensitized people are to barbarism and, you know, the brutal yes. mortal nature of life being
I don't want the best
gone
moments.
In one second.
I just can't bring
these people up. Celebrating someone's yeah. death. It's truly disgusting.
He was obviously disgusting. Martyr material.
Yeah.
He was obviously martyr material. And what she's admitting is that she is neither wife material nor mother material.
That's very true.
No, she's,
and
she's,
she can be
not
these
even civilization
things.
Material. People not like that should not be in a civilization because you must be civil to be in a civilization.
Not Christian civilization. If she was Aztec, she'd be fine.
Maybe.
So there is that important detail to sort of bear in mind. But what she is showing is obviously her own nature. And part of wishing her well is wishing her whatever is necessary for her conversion. And if that includes her losing her job, her being told you can't be a nurse, you can't be a teacher, you can't be in any kind of government position, you know, do manual labor until you change your mind, then that is part of wishing her well. It's not that I want her soul to burn. It's that I want her to be punished enough to change.
And we'll move from the Christian perspective to Stephen Miller's perspective, because he's not so forgiving.
No.
Again, I'm very, very much finding myself aligned with these chaps. This is so good.
We will prevail over the forces of wickedness and evil. They cannot imagine what they have awakened. They cannot conceive of the army that they have arisen in all of us. Because we stand for what is good, what is virtuous, what is noble. And to those trying to incite violence against us, those trying to foment hatred against us, what do you have? You have nothing. You are nothing. You are wickedness, you are jealousy, you are envy, you are hatred. You are nothing. You can build nothing. You can produce nothing. You can create nothing. We are the ones who build. We are the ones who create. We are the ones who lift up humanity. You thought you could kill Charlie Kirk? You have made him immortal. You have immortalized Charlie Kirk. And now millions will carry on his legacy.
True.
I mean, I love it.
That is, you know, a clear contrast of good versus evil.
Oh, yeah.
He names a few of the deadly sins: envy, mm-hmm. wrath, sloth, mm-hmm. And he says that what is good is to use your talents for the good. This is a very Christian speech from someone who is Jewish.
Yeah, but
so I've zero problem with what he's saying.
I'm not saying he's not got the virtues, but the sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not terribly Christian.
Yes, it is.
No, he's not going to...
It is
Stephen Miller is not loving his enemies.
Any medieval Catholic would have recognized this as a profoundly Christian sentiment.
Yeah, but Stephen Miller is not loving his enemies. He's crushing his enemies.
Which is part of what you should do.
He recognizes them as irredeemably evil and to be smoten wherever they are found.
Correct.
And I agree with him. I think he's on something here. And then you get the coverage, right? The BBC were obviously like, oh, right, he's far right.
Really?
In their coverage. Yeah, yeah, this is just like, they were literally like far right.
These people don't know what far right actually means. Like,
yeah, no, that's
fine. Room either.
Charlie Kirk was the moderate. Everyone knows Charlie Kirk was the moderate. And if you think he was far right, then okay, you continue to damn his memory. Yeah, exactly. You're in for a surprise, because I think the American right now is just beyond negotiating with this kind of position
exactly.
of slander. I really think they're beyond it.
Yep.
And good for them, frankly. You know, like, I'm with Trump and Miller. Just know we're going to crush you now. We're just going to absolutely crush you. And you get what you deserve. And then you get, like, you know, delusional nonsense. Oh, Charlie Kirk's lead overdose is irrelevant. Honestly, I don't think so at all, man. If you guys think that Charlie Kirk isn't martyr material, if you think this doesn't matter, I don't think you're looking very far into the future with your predictions here. And then you get truly the most... I mean, just... I can't understand how he's still allowed on the internet with takes like this. Destiny said, this Charlie Kirk memorial is indistinguishable from a Nazi rally, and F anyone who wants to pretend that it's not. It's like, yeah.
What?
Yeah. John's just like, yeah, that young man, I forgive him, Adolf Hitler, 1939. So you are... He's being deliberately provocative. He's just a prat. And then you get the protesters, because of course there were leftist protesters there. Turn off the music. Just, but as you can see, it's the sort of left-wing Westboro Baptist Church. With truth equals love, which is why we're here protesting a funeral.
God hates... Who does God hate, apparently?
Oh, I don't know.
Proud sinners.
Proud sinners.
Yes, yes.
At least it's not gays anymore, I suppose. But, yeah, so...
Weird thing to protest again. Just truly awful humans.
And then you have the truly online radical left-wing position. White supremacy is so crazy because he literally killed your husband. You're forgiving him because he's white.
Ah, yes, that's the reason.
100,000 likes on this tweet.
What is wrong with me?
Because you think, oh, you've just pulled out some random thing that's had 300 views. No, no, no. 100,000 likes.
What?
This is representative of a large slice of leftist thinking.
That's actual delusion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah, I don't know what to say at this
point. And I think that this tweet, yeah, well, exactly.
It's demonic possession, right?
This tweet properly exemplifies why I think the American right is just beyond debating with leftists now.
Yeah.
So is that now, bothered. You've ended the debate.
If you're that delusional, there's no point in having a conversation with you at that. Precisely. There just isn't, right? Like,
no,
that's your position. Just go in the bin. Like, yeah, that we'll step over you. Yeah. You're done. That's
correct.
Not even worth entertaining.
Correct. And there's nothing unchristian about that. Like, there's nothing unchristian.
Just,
about
even saying, if it's unchristian, it's realism. I'm afraid. What can be debated with this?
Nothing. Hmm. Nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing. So these people should not be in any position where they have power over anyone else. And all what they are allowed to do from now on is probably manual labor. Not that there's anything wrong with manual labor, but
there's something wrong
with them having responsibility over anybody's life.
Yeah.
That's the end of it.
Completely agree. In conclusion, it was an incredible memorial service, incredible turnout, incredible feeling of unity from the American right with all of this. As an Englishman, it was very American, so, you know, I'm not gonna judge how Americans do pageantry, but they do it fairly well.
Well done.
Well
done for them.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's their own thing, so I'm not gonna judge that. But it was really heartfelt the whole way through, and you could tell that literally millions of people were genuinely changed by all of this. And so, incredible, incredible work, everyone. And Godspeed. Loads of super chats coming, so I'm going to get through them as quickly as I can. Beginning with Blood for the Blood God on Rumble, who sent $200. Thanks, man. And no thank you, I don't want Palestine and ham. Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. Full Sulla, go full Sulla, Trump. No friend unrewarded, no enemy unscathed. Bonies do a history on Sulla. I'm sure we've done Sulla, actually. But what was the thing in his grave, you know? No friend ever served me or enemy hurt me who hasn't been repaid in full, or something like that. Which is just so great. And I love that Trump is much more of a Sulla than he is a Christian. Alex Jones came out against conspiracy theories on The Bullet when he discussed his experience shooting wild hogs. Yeah, and what was weird is, like, Nick Fuentes is against, like, the Israel conspiracy theory as well. And it's just like what is happening, man? Anime streamer says, I'm sorry, I'm probably the outlier here. I think Erica Kirk and going up and saying that she forgives her husband killer and then the audience clapping to be very weird. Well, yeah, I mean, I find that weird too, but I'm not a Christian, so...
You're missing the rally was a Christian revival moment.
That's fine. I understand. Yeah. It's you know, the Christians are doing something I personally don't understand. That's totally fine. And the thing is, it's not that it's not noble or sweet. It's just it's not how I feel. I just literally flog him through the streets until there's no flesh on his back. Stephen Miller, 2028. The thing is, Stephen Miller, I like Stephen a lot. But he's not the leader, right? he's the executor. He's the right hand of the king.
He doesn't have the sort of charisma, the stature for a leader. He doesn't exude it.
He's got the charisma, but not the stature.
He's the right hand of the king who goes out and does the dirty work.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I get the propaganda value it gives our side in attracting normies to embrace us, but I think making his funeral a rally where people clap and cheer in the middle of the speech is to be kind of tasteless. The thing is, Charlie Kirk was in favor of doing that. Charlie Kirk was in favor of being political on this subject because the reason that he was killed was politics.
Yes.
So you can't exactly divorce his murder from politics. Reverend Norse says, I'm a pagan in the Tom Roswell mold. I'm with Carl on this. We Norse had an appropriate thing for this called the Blood Eagle. Yes. Well... I'm disturbed. Both sides believe the other is evil. And if conversation is not possible, does this mean we're having to war? Tim Pool prophecy. Well, the thing is, if you make conversation impossible, then you leave only civil war available.
Yes.
And this is just the way that they have taken these things. And so what more can we do?
Yep. Can I get the mouse?
Yes, you can. Let's go.
So shall we talk a little bit about the recognition of Palestine? Samson, can you give us the right screen? Yes. If you haven't bought your copy of Islander, please go ahead and do so. They are running out.
One week left.
And an
one
awesome week left. Mug as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and our Godzilla mug. Yeah. Yes.
Look at the mug. It's wicked.
It is gorgeous. So Keir Starmer decided that he was going to recognize a Palestinian state. He said that he doesn't want to reward Hamas. It's a brutal terror organization. But a call for a two-state solution is the exact opposite of what Hamas wants. This is idiotic on the face of it because the Palestinians have always seen the two-state solution as a stepping stone to the one-state solution where the Jews are kicked out. So let's just be honest about that kind of detail. We recognized Israel as a homeland for the Jewish people, but don't recognize England as a homeland for the English people.
Oh, yeah.
Today, we joined 150 countries.
The world's last stateless people, the English.
Yeah. Today, we join 150 countries who recognize a Palestinian state and a pledge that there can be a better future. I know the strength of feeling that this conflict provokes. We have seen it on our streets, in our schools, in conversations we've had with friends and family. I'm going to leave that without a comment, but you know what my comment is.
Is that what Keir Starmer said?
That's what Keir Starmer said.
We wouldn't have it if you didn't import people, mate.
Yeah.
Wouldn't
be
that's
our problem.
That's a problem of your own making, thank
that
you.
Seems like a relevant detail. That seems like a relevant detail, doesn't it? Blah, blah, blah. We must reject hate. We must redouble our efforts to combat hatred in all its forms.
We're going
to
reject hate, therefore we're going to give Hamas their own state.
I don't understand. I don't understand. And then he calls for a release of the hostages and an end to violence and an end to suffering. Mate, there's going to be suffering this
time. Oh, I'm just wishing for nice things now. I'm for good things and not bad things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly.
At least he said hostages, not sausages.
Yeah.
Not this time, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to discuss the rent boys again. As to sort of explaining the reasoning for why this happened, one explanation is that there are pamphlets being distributed in Rochdale by the Rochdale Friends of Palestine, which is, I'm sure, a group you'd all love to see more of, saying that if you vote Labour, you lose your
Jesus.
Faith.
Look at that image at the bottom.
No, that's subtle.
The Rochdale Friends of...
That's subtle.
Rochdale Friends of Palestine are definitely no relation to the grooming gangs, are they?
None whatsoever, I'm sure.
Just the thing, if any right winger printed a leaflet like this and distributed it, this would be hate speech and you'd go to jail.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. You'd be away for a long time.
There is no way you'd get away with this.
So this is the kind of stuff that's being handed over, and one explanation is that this is what's driving Starmer's recognition. That's not true, unfortunately. Because while this is part of it, there is a bigger context where the Brits are working with the Australians and the Canadians and the French. And two of Britain's most important geopolitical allies in real terms, if we were to ignore the American Empire, Portugal and Malta, are in on it and are also recognizing Palestine at the same time.
Yeah, why is this all happening at the same time?
So this seems to be a widely coordinated thing, and I don't fully understand the reasoning behind it, except, and this is just the sort of possible conspiracy theory, they're trying to accelerate things faster. Because the consequences are going to be not particularly good. So the Israelis want to shut down some French consulates, but one of the complaints that they had was, firstly, the foreign secretary is saying that the Israelis must not retaliate. What the Israelis are saying, and you can find it somewhere in this link, is that British Jews will never forgive Labour for recognizing Palestine. And so there's...
They don't vote for Labour anyway.
Yeah. But anyway...
They vote Conservative.
They do.
And there's about 250,000 of them.
They do.
So it's not exactly a vast voting bloc.
But there is...
What are you threatening people?
A little bit more to it.
All right.
I'm sure. So these are the countries that now recognize Palestine. And in reality, it's made absolutely no difference.
Oh, yeah.
Because as far as the, you know, Israelis are concerned, this is just a reward for Hamas.
Yeah. But Hamas already claimed it a victory.
They literally came out
and was like, woo, thanks very much. It's a victory for us.
That it was a victory. And
I mean,
that
it is a victory for them.
It is. Objectively. There is no doubt that it's a victory for Hamas. And that, in a way, they've succeeded in one of the things that they're trying to achieve, which I'll get to later. Trump is saying that he doesn't agree with Starmer, rather obviously, and I'd say rather, you know, with some reason.
Trump's like, I was going to turn that into a holiday resort.
Yeah.
Trump Gaza, wasn't it?
Yeah, Trump Gaza.
But this is what the Palestinians in the UK are saying, and essentially that they're saying that this is just a correction of the Balfour Declaration. So what they're saying is that it was Britain's fault all along.
Yeah.
And now Britain is recognizing a historic error that it committed
in
the Balfour Declaration. The subtext of that, Carl, which I think is slightly more important, is that they don't see a Palestinian state on the sort of 67 borders, which was what people are talking about, as being final. The objective is to overturn the Balfour Declaration. Regardless of how you feel about it, I don't have positive feelings about the Balfour Declaration, but they were planning several years ago, the Balfour Declaration, the British promised to establish a national homeland for the Jewish people in Palestine, but they've been promising for several years now to sue Britain for this. And now that the Brits recognize them as a state, it makes it a little bit easier for the Palestinians to sue Britain. Because now it's a state acting against another state. So the backfiring potential of this move is quite significant.
Well, good luck, Palestine. We don't have any bloody money.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go into this, but there were some legal experts who were saying that the Brits can be sued for £2 trillion.
Well done.
No, do 100 trillion, mate. You know, 500 gazillion, whatever, quintillion,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Like, we haven't got any fucking money.
What was that from what's his name?
Yeah, it's literally like from
it's
Powers.
Exactly. Exactly.
Two trillion, where are we going to get that?
Maybe we can deduct it from all the aid we sent them as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. The Palestinian Authority, I'll get to that in a second. But let's look first at the Israeli reaction.
Oh, yeah, I bet Netanyahu was thrilled.
Yeah, I'm going to read out some of the things that he said about this, because this is in Hebrew. The leaders who recognize a Palestinian state have given a huge reward to terrorism after the 7 October attack, which is not inaccurate.
I can't help but notice that the formation of the State of Israel was preceded by Jewish terrorism against Britain, though.
Yes.
So we kind of already do reward terrorism.
Well, the reality that nobody wants to talk about is that terrorism works.
Yeah.
I mean, all media now censor themselves over Islam because of the Charlie Hebdo massacre.
Yeah.
So he commits that there is never going to be a Palestinian state on the West Bank of the Jordan. This is an important detail.
Yeah.
Because it means that he will try to establish one on the other side where there's already a country called Jordan.
Yeah.
And for years I've presented this terrorist state facing enormous pressure from home and abroad. So he kind of confirms that even though Israel has signed the Oslo Accords, which commit to an end state of a two-state solution, he, as the longest-serving Israeli prime minister, has never respected that international commitment.
No kidding.
No kidding, exactly. And the Palestinians are pretty much, like, everybody sees this as a halfway point. We get a state, you get a state, and then we go after each other again and decide who's really in charge and who has to
bend the knee. If Palestine then becomes a state and then they begin attacking Israel, then they're committing an illegal war. Then
the UN can get involved.
Well, there you go.
Oh, no.
There you go. Problem solved.
The last time the UN got heavily involved, the Israelis killed the head of the UN mission responsible for...
Didn't they just kill the diplomats the other day who were trying to negotiate this stuff?
They tried to kill the Hamas political delegation that were trying to negotiate an end to the war. So the Israeli interest in ending the war is pretty much non-existent.
Yeah, I don't really take them very seriously when they're like, yes, we'd like an end to the war.
No, their end is
leveled. Exactly.
And so the next result of this is going to be that rather than recognize a Palestinian state, which is why I'm saying it's acceleration, the Israelis would try to annex the West Bank in full. Right. And my guess is people are asking, well, doesn't that mean that they have to let the Palestinians vote? No. They will
expel
impose,
them.
They will do two things. They are already doing one of them, which is slowly making the West Bank uninhabitable, mm-hmm. not at the scale that they're doing in Gaza, but slowly locking it down, isolating the different population centers, and developing the ability to destroy them one by one. And the second thing is that they'll require some kind of pledge of allegiance to Israel as a Jewish state. Mm-hmm. If you do that, maybe you'll get the right to vote. Palestinians won't do it, therefore they must be expelled.
Yeah. Mm.
So there will be this kind of escalation of violence by Israel to make sure that the two-state solution becomes completely impossible. And this isn't just me imagining things. The Israelis are expecting big escalation in the West Bank yeah. as a result. And they are saying that what we're trying to do is to erase the idea of a Palestinian state. And this was from the 20th of August.
Yeah, this isn't even long ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is Bezalel Smotrich, the Israeli finance minister, who is therefore one of the most important people in the Israeli cabinet, explaining how settlements are going to be expanded to completely cut off Jerusalem from the West Bank. Right. So they're working on basically covering this area of East Jerusalem with Israeli settlements. They're working on filling this area, the Jordan Valley, with Israeli settlements so that the Palestinian population is sort of trapped. Mm. And then slowly they'll have no choice but to go to Jordan, which would obviously detonate Jordan.
And yeah, Jordan obviously don't want to take them because they've tried this before and the Palestinians didn't exactly behave themselves.
No. Well, right now, 70% of 60% of Jordan's population is Palestinian.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
So if that number were to increase further, that's it. There's no Jordan. It's just a Palestinian state.
Yeah.
And you can see here in black, this is the Israeli separation barrier, which is the bits of the West Bank that they've chewed off, which are supposed to be, in theory, part of a Palestinian state. So you can see that it's not going to happen. And when these powers are recognizing a Palestinian state, they're not saying what the capital is.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Where's the Palestinian capital?
Well, administratively, it's in Ramallah here.
Right. A pile of rubble over there.
Actually, Ramallah is okay, but they're slowly turning it to, or they will be turning it to rubble. But they want it to be Jerusalem,
yeah.
which is never going to happen. Unless the Israelis are catastrophically defeated in some kind of regional war. That's just not going to happen. And they've bitten off this part here as well to connect the Jordan Valley with Jerusalem and to separate the north of the West Bank from the south of the West Bank. And the idea is to make sure that there is no possible...
Salami slice the West Bank out of existence.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing. And it's not going to happen. Like, the idea that this is going to result in peace, according to what Keir Starmer said...
There's no way this is going to cause peace.
It's going to accelerate the conflict. Yeah. And what it will mean is that the Israelis will increasingly be confident in having no choice other than...
Shooting them.
Forcing Jordan and Egypt to open their border and take the Palestinians from the West Bank and Gaza. This is the main effect of this declaration. It's an escalatory, accelerationist declaration. It doesn't really serve any purpose related to the declared purpose. Shall we put it this way? And there's some interesting questions here posed by Elad, who's obviously, you know, quite hostile to the idea of a Palestinian state. What's the territory? No one knows.
Yeah.
Is Gaza included? Hamas will rule Gaza indefinitely. Mm-hmm. Who'll be governing? The Palestinian Authority, as we know it, is in the process of collapsing. And the Israelis are doing everything that they can to bankrupt the Palestinian Authority, which rules over the West Bank, and make sure that it collapses. Will they continue paying terrorists and their families? Yes, because from the Palestinian perspective, the people described by the Israelis are terrorists, as terrorists, including people who kill civilians, are seen as soldiers. In the same way that, you know, the IDF is bombing civilian areas in Gaza quite intensely, and these people are soldiers. So there is no distinction here between the two. Would you continue with anti-Semitism in your education system? Well, the Quran is anti-Semitic.
I can't believe they're going to stop now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Quran is anti-Jewish and anti-Christian. So obviously they're going to continue to teach the Quran. And so obviously that will continue to be what it is. Would Jews be welcome to live in Palestine like Arabs do in Israel? The Arabs are not particularly welcome in Israel. Yeah. I mean, people are talking, Israeli officials are talking about kicking out the Arabs who do live in Israel, firstly. And secondly, absolutely not. I mean, the Jews were accepted in Iraq and in Alexandria and in Cairo and in Beirut and in Damascus and in Algeria. But this all ended with the establishment of the State of Israel. And it's going to be, you know, 200 years after there is no Israel before we see Jews accepted again living in the Muslim world. That's just not going to happen. And now you can have a state, the right of return is still a thing. Yes, they will continue to demand to take over territory that's recognized by Israel. Could the UNRWA refugees finally be settled in Palestine? They will not accept that. But on a personal note, I'd be very grateful if somebody could take the Palestinians who are in Lebanon. But that's a different story.
And here, please.
Well, Keir Starmer said that part of the deal is to bring in more Palestinians to get treatment. And they will come with families, and the families will have a right to a family life.
And they'll have
they will bring
back.
More families.
They'll have nowhere to go either, though.
Like, pestering.
They'll say they can't eject them because look what Israel's doing in Palestine.
Exactly.
So they're here forever.
Pestering parasites on my land. Brilliant.
With military training.
I'm so annoyed.
And a huge grudge. And I want to end with the words of the American envoy.
I'm so tired.
Oh, yeah, no, these people that blame us for part of the war, bringing them here, that's definitely not going to result in any issue. No.
This is why I'm not sympathetic to Israel. It's like, look, man, you know, like, you're being very aggressive in this thing, and I'm not even judging you on that, but now this is a consequence we have to bear.
Yeah. If we had a right-wing leader that was authoritarian, put his foot down and was like, no, we're not doing this, then, like, I couldn't care less about any of it.
Exactly.
Like, I wouldn't care, because it wouldn't affect me.
Yeah.
But now it affects me. Like, yeah, there's a problem here. Like, yeah. I'm not okay with more parasites coming to my country. Like, I've had enough.
Not just parasites, absolute lunatics.
Oh, yeah, no, worst kind of parasites. Yeah. These people will do atrocious things.
Got 300-something Palestinians, God knows when, in the 1990s. 300 Palestinians, not 300,000. 300-something Palestinians in the 1990s, and 60 to 70% ended up convicted of crimes.
Mm.
And then pretty much most of their descendants as well.
Thanks, Israel.
So the idea that this is a community that is going to integrate anywhere is laughable. They will come here with a combination of self-righteousness and vengeance.
Will it be even worse in the
UK?
That
is going to be...
It'll be even worse in the UK.
It'll be the worst.
Our judicial system is weaponized in their favor. Yes. So it'll actually be even worse.
But also, what historic resentment can Palestinians possibly have against the Danes? Like, what have the Danes ever done to Palestine? You know, no, we're the Balfour.
They're one of the biggest providers of aid to Palestinian refugee camps, them and the Norwegians.
And still,
you get this kind of malice. So I want to close with what the U.S. Special Envoy to Syria said about the region, which I think is illustrative.
What's the end game?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask that, because I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. Look. The end game, when we say peace, it's an illusion. There's never been peace. There will probably never be peace, because everybody's fighting for legitimacy. So people say, well, they're fighting over borders and boundaries. It's not what they're fighting over. A border or boundary is the currency of a negotiation. The end result is somebody wants dominance, which means somebody has to submit. In that part of the world, submit. There's no Arabic word for submit. They can't wrap their head around submit.
There are many words for submit.
Yeah.
So eventually, prosperity is the only answer.
So this is where the Americans turn idiotic.
I love this stupid liberal get out of the end. If only everyone was a little bit richer, then everything would... No. This is not about materialism. This is about the genuine sort of spirit of the two factions that are warring.
The Osama bin Laden was worth hundreds of millions. Yeah. His deputy was a doctor, a full-on MD.
ISIS another full one of middle-class professionals.
Upper-middle-class professionals, and they were ridiculously skilled.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the idea that prosperity is in any way a solution to this...
This is the liberal delusion.
He was completely right up until he said that.
Yeah.
Up until he said that.
And this has always been the problem with the West meddling in the Middle East as well. Yes. It's like we are materialists, and therefore we assume everyone fundamentally is materialist.
Exactly.
And these guys are like, yeah, I'm going to blow myself up for Allah. It's like, okay, I'm not sure that's material conditions that's caused that. You know,
A bit more money will stop him from doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
This literal doctor or engineer is going on a jihad. It's like, he's not lacking anything.
Exactly. Shall we go through a couple of the comments?
Yeah. God, I'm so tired of the Middle East, man.
Imagine how I feel.
Yeah, I can't.
It literally made me Catholic.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. That's how tired I got.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about the Palestinians. Moderate Jews tried to make deals for over 100 years. The Saudis do have the technology for making them an island in the South Pacific. Well, it's true, but okay. But even if it was true, it doesn't matter because now it's about the indignity of accepting the loss.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. That's what this is about. It's about recognition.
Exactly.
Weirdly, Francis Fukuyama has got a good line on all of this, which is about the struggle for recognition is what really is the sort of idealistic motor of history from Hegel. And he's right, I think. I think this is what we see in Israel-Palestine.
Very true.
No matter how much he wants the Muslim vote alone, that alone isn't enough in numbers. They're totally done for on the next general election. So why? Pro-Israel lobby donated half to his cabinet, the first one. So why? Why is Keir Starmer doing this?
It seems like a coordinated wider move across the West. And there is no good faith explanation for it. Because they know that the Israelis will never accept the two-state solution. Mm. They know that the Israeli opposition to Netanyahu doesn't want one.
Yep.
The only people, like the people who vote for something that would lead to a two-state solution are maybe 5% of the Israelis, 2% of the Israelis, something completely ridiculous like that. So they're making this decision knowing full well that it goes precisely nowhere and that it leads to acceleration. So that should be considered. If you wanted to give Netanyahu an excuse to sort of resolve the West Bank issue now in a similar way to what he's doing in Gaza... That's precisely it, because then he can turn to the Israeli public and say, I'm the only one who has proven that he's willing to use enough military force to prevent the emergence of a Palestinian state. Yeah. And I'm the only one who has proven that I can bend the Americans to my will consistently in order to prevent the emergence of a Palestinian state. Remember, 10% of the Israeli population lives in the West Bank. Mm. You will not move out 10% of your population except if you've faced a catastrophic defeat or if you've faced mass migration from Islam and you've become Birmingham. But these are the only ways to do it.
Wow.
The left not thinking ahead is ancient knowledge. They're ignorant of the past and blind to the future. Well, yeah. This revival will have little to do as long as the Muslims stop attacking little girls.
No, well, this will have to do as long as...
Yeah, right.
Well...
Oh, yeah, right. Well, yeah, this revival will have to do as long as... Yeah, good point. Here in Canada, we now recognize Palestine as a state. Well, this is the thing. I think it's one of those sort of, like, ideas whose time has come moments.
Yes.
For the shitlib international class.
Yes.
Which is great for you. It's going to accomplish nothing. If anything, it's
going to backfire.
It's going to make things worse. Yeah.
Yes.
Coincidentally, two days before, our Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada announced hate speech legislation. Wow, what a surprise.
Welcome to our world.
Yeah. If Israel sends a flood of Palestinians into the UK, it should be treated as the equivalent of being directly attacked. Sure, but it's not going to be.
Yeah.
Because like, that's what they were saying about Russia.
Yeah.
They're weaponizing immigrants, Israel.
Yeah, we're literally just going to take them and they're going to stay here forever. And we're going to pay for the privilege. Steve says, Carl, please don't ever change us. Atheists don't need to forgive. Stay forward thinking. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, I'll leave the forgiveness to the Christians. You guys are good at that. We'll worry about the rest of it. God, that mouse.
Keeping my mouth shut.
Yeah. Can we get the next one up, Samson?
Cool. Get Islander. It's very, very good. And it's not going to be on sale for much longer, so buy it. Also, You can get this little chap. I think this is only in the UK, isn't it?
No. You can get it anywhere.
Oh, is it?
The
Gammonzilla.
International store.
Rock your Gammonzilla. Okay. It's a cool little mug. Very good quality as well, actually. So
Everything we do is good quality.
No, but you know what I mean? You get some mugs that are quite thin.
It's the same with the t-shirts as well.
A mug aficionado.
It's the same with the t-shirts. Because the thing is, like, you could, like, you know, scrimp and save and, like, cut corners and have, like, some thin t-shirt. But I'm like, no, we'll just, you know, we'll just get good ones. But anyway, let's carry on.
Yeah, right. Patriots, we're in control. Or the right wing is in control. The online right, we are in control. We are winning effectively. And I want to talk about Nigel Farage, our flip-flopping Farage.
Our erstwhile dear leader.
Yeah, well, but there's benefits to this. There are benefits, at least if we're looking at him on a curve. So the flip-flops instantly are no good, obviously. But if we look at him on a curve, it's fantastic. So I think to start, we will look at pretty much a year ago and what Nigel Farage had to say about mass deportations, if we can just get that there.
I'm not going to get dragged down the route of mass deportations or anything like that.
Do you support mass deportations?
Well, if people come illegally, they should not be allowed to stay. Simple as. Simple as. And the only way you're ever going to solve the channel, and boy, have a look at the last 3 days. You know, 500 odd on Friday, 800 on Saturday, nearly 300 yesterday. I mean, the numbers are just exploding, you know, of these young men that are coming. And unless they know that, number one, they'll never be granted refugee status by coming via this route, that number two, they're not going to stay, they'll keep coming. It's dead simple. Doesn't matter what you do to the gangs.
So,
I mean, you could give it, you know, you could give these gang members life in prison, but the more people are going to step in to the gap because of the money involved. I mean, look, think about drugs. You know, however big a sentence is we give to drug dealers, there's always somebody else to come and fill that plate.
So, okay, you've identified the problem, all the causes, all the exigencies of it. So what's the one thing that you need to do is just mass deport all of the people who are taking advantage of that. It's really simple.
Yeah, and I mean, that is what you said at the start. So I'm not going to keep... There's no point labouring the point and you guys watching Nigel Farage be a wet blanket, a wet lettuce. we've seen him do that many times. But coincidentally, that was the 17th of September 2024.
Yeah, so it was a year ago.
And then today... Sorry, what?
Oh, so we are having mass deportations.
It's back on the menu, boys.
Superb. Great. I mean, I'm glad to hear it, Mr. Farage.
Yeah. I mean, I'm here for it. So this released today, and obviously there's been a subtle update as we were going live as well to say that the figures that they've got in here was based on a study which was slightly incorrect, so they're going to publish some new studies or whatever. But the basis of it is, it doesn't really matter, actually, quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't care about the money.
The basis of it is that they're saying, yeah, reforms say mass deportations would save £234 billion, as it warns Boris wave of migration will take critical toll on the welfare system. So they're looking at this from a monetary
economic perspective, which is not the correct one, but anyway.
It's not, but it's a start. We've gone from...
I'll take whatever I can take. Yep. I'll take whatever I can get.
We have gone...
That's Christian spirit there.
Oh, is it right? I think it's just the spirit of abject desperation at this point.
But I mean, Well, we've gone from he's not interested in it at all. Mm-hmm. To a year later.
And not only that, in the Edgington interview, he's like, well, is it at least your ambition?
No.
And yeah, no, he was like, no, it's not my ambition.
Yeah, I'm not interested. Yep. Political impossibility,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, doesn't want it to his name because it would sound bad, frankly.
And a political impossibility was what he said. Yep. And so a year later, we've now got this on the table. So brief rundown of this article. It says Nigel Farage will pledge to eject hundreds of thousands of illegal migrants. So legal migrants in an unprecedented reversal of Britain's relaxed border rules. The reform UK leader will unveil plans to force all migrants with a permanent residency to reapply for visas under stricter criteria, including a higher salary requirement and a better standard of English. Now, this is all actually perfectly reasonable.
Completely reasonable.
It's not like most of the world would agree that this is just absolutely fine. There's no controversy here at all, shouldn't be.
No.
Anyway, yes, you should be able to speak English. You're in England.
And you should earn lots of money because we don't have to pay for you?
Yeah.
Why are we paying for you?
You should be able to facilitate your own life.
If you're not a net contributor to the country, why are you here?
Yeah, 100%.
We've got enough parasites of our own, thank you.
Exactly. Absolutely exactly. So they're saying that it will save them like £234 billion, or us, save us.
Even if it was a tenth of that, I'd be happy.
Yeah. We can quibble over, and this is what the online sort of establishment are doing now, is trying to quibble over the numbers. It doesn't matter. If it saves any money, yeah, that's fine. Even if it saves my culture, it saves my country, that's fine. It could save no money.
Even if I have
money.
To pay for it.
Yeah,
I'd pay for them to go.
Yeah, even if it didn't save any money, I'd be happy. Even if it cost money, I'd be happy.
I remember realizing that the Remain vote was going to lose. Because in the debates, they kept on arguing that leaving the EU is going to cost you £300 a year. Your family will be worse off by £500 a year.
Sold.
I would pay that just to wipe that smug look off your face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's reasonable.
You know, like.
Oh, dear. And so Zia Youssef, Reform Policy Chief, said the changes would lead to hundreds of thousands of people having to apply and ultimately losing their settled status. So we're basically talking about like denaturalization, like they're gone. They're completely gone. And this is all to do with, we have this thing called indefinite leave to remain as well, where, you know, you
sort of like a green card to the American audience.
If they've lived in the country consistently for 5 years, for some reason they're just allowed to become citizens and they can just stay forever. And I don't understand it. It makes no goddamn sense.
Yeah, it dilutes the
IBL.
No. It dilutes the prestige of the country, because if anyone can gain access based on time, there is no what's good about a country. Where's the appeal? You know, you want to live in a certain place because it's exclusive, right? We like exclusive things. We like things which are rare. If anyone can come here, it loses it.
Sure, but even then, why should we give any of it up to anyone else anyway?
Oh, no, I agree.
You are right, but like, you know, these people can just piss off back to where they came from.
Yeah, they've got a homeland.
Yeah. Boris waved 3.8 million people Boris instituted, let in like 3 years.
Yeah, that's,
it's like, you are
insane.
It is mad.
Mental. And there, you know, that's fast approaching now.
Yeah.
You know, that needs to be fixed. Now, there's a few things to take a look at of why this is good, right? Because, so I wasn't aware of this, but I became aware of it. When you start talking about things and you make it policy, the Lords can't overturn it. They cannot overturn it. They cannot get in the way. So the fact that he's saying this now, as much as he's weak sauce, flip-flop, sure, barrage, sure, whatever, this is very good, very promising.
Making it into a manifesto promise means that the Lords cannot get to overturn government policy that it was elected on. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. They cannot get in the way of this.
Yep.
So if they win a majority and they get in, and this is in their manifesto, and they actually seek to enact it, which, oh, God, please.
Lots of ifs. Lots of ifs here. But okay.
Exactly. But that's fantastic. It's superb. Absolutely brilliant. So
I love that the Boris wave has become a political word.
Yeah.
In Britain, and that it will forever be associated with Boris Johnson.
He will go down.
He did it. He's the one who did it.
He will go down as one of the worst, if not the worst, Prime Minister we have ever had.
In his own words, he wanted the Financial Times to like him again. It's like, why do you want those traitors to like you?
Child of a man.
Yeah, disgraceful.
So you've got, you know, articles like this from The Guardian. Farage vows to scrap indefinite leave to remain, placing thousands at risk.
The thing is,
good.
The other,
it needs to be millions.
Well, it's going to be hundreds of thousands at the very least, but it needs to be millions. You are right.
The other big immigration destinations are the Gulf, Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia.
Look how they do it.
Look how they do it.
Yeah.
You lose your job, you're out.
Yeah, and that's how it should be.
You will never have political enfranchisement. You will never get benefits from this thing.
Unless the king decides that, you know, you are granted citizenship because of my benevolence towards you and your personal services for the country. It's that exclusive. It's that limited. Now they have a sort of gold visa in the UAE that lets you stay even after you lose your job.
Sure, if you pay.
But that is based on a ridiculously high income.
Yeah.
And based on so many other requirements that they are genuinely recruiting the best. So this isn't controversial anywhere else in the world, which is why the liberals have to understand how extreme they are.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to turn Britain into a global slum.
Yeah.
Which is an insane policy anywhere in the world. Everybody who lives in a global slum wants to leave it.
Yes.
That's why they keep coming here.
Which is why tens of thousands of Brits every year.
But there's nowhere else where they get benefits except in Europe.
I know. It's actually insane. And so you got articles like this saying, you know, Reform UK plans to force non-citizens to apply for visas with high salary thresholds and no access to NHS services. Don't tempt me with a good time. This is fantastic.
Yeah, perfect.
You know, this is how it should be.
Yeah. Non-citizens should have no access to any services. What are you talking
about? Why am I paying for some rando to turn up and use my tax money? Like, I don't even get to go to, you know, a GP. Like, it's that inaccessible to, you know, to Britons that work. This is the thing. And I've argued this a lot, is those that cry about the welfare state ending are the ones which can use it. Those that are paying for the welfare state can't access it. Like, I can't access the NHS. You think I'm going to be able to call up at 9 a.m. when they open and get an appointment in a few weeks' time?
I get this from my wife all the time.
It's an impossibility.
The phone lines open at 8 a.m. and instantly they're rammed. And it's just like, good luck getting...
Those that actually fund the welfare state are unable to use it. And that's not how it should be. Because that's only going to breed massive resentment, huge contempt for those that are using it. Yeah. That's not how it should be.
And then it's so many other things like housing... And like just the amount of money we actually spend on just giving them free money. So why are we doing any of this?
Oh, it's delusion.
It's crazy.
It's not that. These people keep saying that any kind of corrective measure is fascism. And what they are doing is willing into being fascism.
Yeah.
Like if this keeps on going for long enough, people in Britain, by 2035, let's say this continues to 2035, people in Britain will be roaming the streets looking for people of a different race.
Yeah, 100% they will.
It will get there. So if you don't want it to get there, please moderate have some sense.
It's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, we've seen the TikTok videos going around of like, you know, a couple of English guys being like, oh, you know, you're a Muslim and I'm going to bully you in the streets. It's like, look, I don't want that to be the country. I don't want that to happen. But what you have to understand is that the population demographics really matter in this way, and you're going to get essentially the Lebanonization of Britain.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you know, you've got no choice. You have to make it so that we are by far the majority population, and that's just never going
to
change.
I mean, in Lebanon, just to sort of make that point briefly, I think I think Dan and I are doing a long episode about this, but there were so many abuses from the Palestinians for so many years that at some point in 1975, the Christians just turned murderous.
Yeah.
So, and went absolutely insane because that was the only way to get the country back.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, they failed.
Yeah. So that.
But that has happened in history. And if you don't learn from it,
yes,
you are not qualified to be in government and you are not qualified to opine about policy.
Yeah. The thing is,
happening now.
If you've got a population that is reasonable with their request and they're doing it in a reasonable fashion, you heed it before it turns into that. Like, what we're getting now as well.
You'd have to
The thing is, the more amenable and restrained, you know, citizenry are in their requests, the more extreme they'll be when they snap.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, nobody in Lebanon...
That whiplash will be crazy.
Nobody in Lebanon ever objected to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Armenians showing up.
Yeah.
Because they set up their own institutions. They went into work immediately. They took care of themselves. They were not a burden to anybody. They lived in a slum in the beginning, and now the whole area is full of jewelry stores.
Yeah.
You know, it's nobody dislikes the Armenians. They didn't ask for anything. They were genuine refugees. Yeah. They'd just been massacred. They'd just been genocided. We're like, okay, you can live here. That's fine. We're not going to hurt you, and you're not going to hurt us.
They didn't start grooming gangs or anything like that.
They didn't start grooming gangs.
Weird, yeah. weird.
They didn't do any of this stuff.
What was the religion of the Armenians again?
Orthodox Christians.
Yeah, oh, what a surprise.
It sort of makes a difference.
Yeah.
So Richard Ties tweeted this out, says, Reform will scrap the indefinite leave to remain scheme retrospectively.
Oh, yeah. I'm so listening, Richard.
We're building off of even more stuff has started to come out. So again, you know, don't tempt me with a good time. Come on now, Richard. Do this, please.
Yeah, don't you dare tease me, Richard.
Yeah. So hundreds of thousands of migrants will have to reapply and will not be able to claim any benefit or social housing. And that is the first thing that Reform has said that I go, that's good.
Yes.
Like, actually do this. That's a fantastic idea, because there are so many people here that are under the sort of pretext of them being here was just to claim money, that they're of no benefit to society. They don't belong here, then leave, right? You know, the only people that should be here and are not a benefit of society are natives. And even then, there should be an element of, you know, pushing them to then be a benefit to society. Yes. But, you know, that's a burden which we just will unfortunately always have in a society. But we don't have to be burdened by random third worlders. Right? That's just not, that's a choice.
So St. Paul says, he who does not work does not eat.
So does Lenin.
Yes.
Lenin said exactly
I don't think St. Paul was quoting Lenin.
I don't think Lenin was quoting St. Paul. But the point is, anyone in a position like that, there's a convergence where it's like, oh yeah, no, you've got to work, you lazy bastards.
But notice this, like, this is some of the first stuff that they've been posting that actually is getting a lot.
Traction and
likes.
Finally.
Now and again.
Navy in the channel.
Yeah.
Think how much traction that'll get.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, the online left, they're going mental about this.
Yeah, I know.
Like, actually going mental about this. I mean, who's this? Deal Ola Wanley? Great British Deal name, Ola. That.
Yeah.
Reform's not serious. Bring it on and see how the courts will deal with it. Well, they will deal with it because...
Human rights will be abolished, right?
That's the point. You establish a political system which will work in your favour for your policies.
Yes.
So yeah, that's fine.
Well, this
bring
is the,
it on.
This is the point, though. Farage, Tice, you better be prepared. You better have a slate of things you're going to repeal that they will appeal to in order to prevent you from doing this.
Yes.
Mm. You better literally, day one, repeal that, repeal that, repeal that, repeal that. Right, there are no more lefty human rights lawyers anymore because there's no more lefty legislation that they use to keep these foreigners in the country. Yeah. So now, all gone.
They need to... Reform, if you're watching. You're not watching.
Oh, but they probably are watching, actually.
Well, heed my words then. You need to hire a lawyer, get them on the payroll, a lawyer that is intimately familiar with every single case that has been, you know, squashed, under what legislation it's been squashed, analyze it, and repeal every single point of legislation. If you don't have that already in place, you need to get it in place. Otherwise, you're not serious.
Yeah, find yourself the furthest right-wing lawyer you can find and just have him draw up literally a slate of things that you just need to repeal on day one.
Every single piece of legislation. Every single bit.
Just literally, like, Tony Blair legislated like a demon, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Every single week he would put through dozens and dozens of sweeping pieces of legislation. You need to be like that in reverse. You need to be like, no, we are going to repeal so goddamn much. You're going to be, you know, your head's going to spin.
And it can all be done in one act.
It can all be done in one act. David Starkey's Great Repeal Bill. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, so this is fantastic. But let's not lose sight of the fact that Nigel Farage is only here at this point in time because, I don't want to take, we shouldn't take all the credit, but it is a large portion of what we do here. Lotus Eaters, online, the online right, quote unquote, he is bending to our will.
It's only because we've made the argument so successfully over the last year that Nigel Farage has realised that the vibe has shifted.
Yeah.
The tide has turned. It's like, no, if you say anything else other than we're going to deport millions, then you're going to get it in the neck constantly in your comment section. You're going to constantly get bombarded with hatred online from people like, why? That is not sufficient.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is absolutely the online right people like us and, thank God you guys helping us stay afloat, that has allowed this sea change in British political politics. And you'll notice how they're all now flying the flag. They're all like, the Lib Dems are like, we're patriots too. Labour are like, we're patriots too. It's like, yeah, okay, traitors, calm down.
Yeah.
I accept that you accept the legitimacy of our movement and how we control the dialectic.
Yeah. And again, you know, his flip-flopping is illustrative of that,
yes.
Right? Like he's a follower, not a leader.
Yes.
You know, like, again, this was something... Not that long ago, we were going to deport 600,000. And then he came out and was like, oh, actually, sorry. Yeah, it's just going to be, you know, it's just going to be men that we're going to deport. And then he rolled that back and was like, no, women are going as well. Because what was the online status of that? Yeah. Everyone was in outrage. Everyone was like, what the hell are you talking about, Nigel?
As the Americans say, chimp out.
Yeah, it literally is. Yeah,
keep chimping out.
Yeah.
Keep chipping out. It's working.
You can follow it. You can track it. Nigel doesn't lead. None of what he's implementing here, none of what he's stating here is his own ideas. It's
our ideas.
It's the right discourse online. Mm-hmm. So you must keep pushing this, right? Nigel Farage, he's a bit weak sauce, but we can use him as a blunt instrument to push the Overton window on a national level. And that's where his use is.
Yes.
Right? That's very, very, very useful.
And when he wins, he might do something useful.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, he might do. You know, I mean, that's the thing.
I'm not holding my breath.
No, no.
God, he might do something useful.
No.
And if he does, I will give him full credit for it. You know, don't get me wrong.
And I think it needs to be explained clearly what are the consequences of failure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he wants to save as much of the system as he can. Fair enough. He has to understand what will happen to the system if he fails and if he doesn't deliver. Because the mood in Britain is extremely dark. People are rightly angry, rightly resentful. There's this enormous sense of injustice and lack of recognition for the native Brits. And eventually this has consequences.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is,
beware of the wrath of the patient man.
Well, the million exactly. Tommy Robinson supporters out last week is that was a shot across the bows, and they really took
yes.
it personally.
Oh yeah,
I saw them.
Like, propaganda's been crazy.
There were like 150,000 far right on the streets. It's like, well, it was more close to a million, but yeah, the point is, be afraid because something is genuinely changing in this country.
And the thing is, even if Nigel gets in power and doesn't do what we want him to do. And when I say we're talking about on a national level, right? Because it is the popular opinion. What we have is the popular opinion. So even if he doesn't do what we want him to do, it's still useful because he would have pushed the Overton window in such a direction that though the individual that comes after him, because inevitably there will be someone that will come after him, if he doesn't do what we want him to do, will have just blank slate. To do everything that we want. So no matter what way you look at it, Nigel Farage is good and useful, at least at the moment, right?
Completely correct.
And just to add to that point, the competition between Lowe, Farage and Jenrick is extremely beneficial.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they all have to prove their credibility.
One up each.
And this is proven in the crucible of the online right. Mm.
I hate to.
This is the sort of testing mechanism, is the online right? And unless you convince that audience that you're serious, you don't have a chance and you will be one-upped by the next guy.
So, for the sake of time, I'm afraid we're going to have to.
Oh, we're over. So we'll close with Ash Sarkar's great words.
So, yes, lads, we're winning. His language.
You know what's interesting? This was from 2016, wasn't it? Right, yeah, so 9 years ago, 2016, 2017. So, yeah, this it's just interesting how quickly things have shifted.
Mm.
You know, because it used to be the absolute cultural dominance of the left.
Yes.
And there was nothing going on the right. And, like, you know, the smug look, they thought they were going to win forever.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to replace us forever. And it's like, well, now there's a million far-right people in the streets. What now, you know? Anyway, let's go to the video comments. Yeah, just, and again, it's a very short span of time that this has all changed in. So, just saying, keep who knows? Pushing. And it really is because we're controlling the dialectic. The question is not, oh, are we going to have an unlimited amount of immigration? The question is, how many are going to get deported by who?
Yeah.
You know, the Lib Dems, the Labour Party, they're all like, oh yeah, we're going to deport. It's like, I know. We know you're going to, because we're not going to give you a choice. Let's go to the first comment.
He was killed because his words made a difference. Because he was showing people the light. And he was killed by the dark.
Elon Musk seems to have been very touched at Charlie's memorial. In fact, here he is quoting the Lord's Prayer, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." And it seems to be more than just words, because here we see him with Donald Trump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like quite similar to Elon in many ways. Like, you know, he's a little bit older than me, but he's still like raised in the same sort of cultural environment, you know, where it's the same, you know, he liked South Park and all that sort of stuff, right? So I feel like quite a lot of kinship with him in many ways. And I was touched by all of that as well.
Mm.
And see why I would be. Anyway, let's carry on.
Send them home! Send them home! Send them home! Send them home!
Keir Starmer's a wanker! Keir Starmer's a wanker! Keir Starmer's a wanker!
We're all trying to cope.
Very good. Very good. Right. From the website, Zest King says, I agree with Ferris that there's no contradiction between forgiving your enemy and doing what justice demands. As for Trump hating his enemies, he is the head of state and the embodiment of the American government. It is his duty to ensure a just punishment is enacted on the killer and all those involved. Sure, that's all true.
Exactly.
But that's not what Trump was thinking. Trump was thinking. Trump was thinking in a very personal... Honestly, Trump has a pagan morality. Trump is thinking like Achilles in the Iliad. He's thinking, no, I just have to crush that guy and he deserves it. Which, again, is why I quite like Trump. Based Ape says, as a Christian, I will forgive those who ask for forgiveness. I'm still waiting to hear the request. Well, this is the thing about the left generally. They're so unrepentant.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm a soft touch. If someone were to come and sincerely crying in my hand, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, fair enough. You know, let it go. But these people are not like that. They hate you and they still want you dead. And they're just annoyed that they're on the back foot now. And so, yeah, I'm personally not in a forgiving mood. Man of Kent says, just like any martyr, by striking him down, they've made him more powerful than they could ever imagine. And the thing is, that's so obviously true. Like, Charlie Kirk was, like, he was obviously very popular, but, like, he wasn't the unifying figure that he is now. Mm. Now there's no reason for anyone to speak against him. Whereas while he was alive and actually, you know, giving his opinions on things, lots of people on the right spoke against him. But that time is over. Welsh Crusader says, for the first time in 30 years since I was a young boy and I went to church and had the best time in honor of Charlie Kirk.
God bless
God. Chance says, the right has to cool down with violent rhetoric. Us, I forgive you. This is the difference between us and them. Yes, but we're at the point now where we just don't need to prove that we're the better people, right?
Yeah.
Why would we have to prove to who? Villains? Oh, look, Satan has turned up and like, prove you're not a bad person to me. It's like...
At a certain point...
why would I do that?
At a certain point, you have to establish that you are the correct one.
Yeah.
And the discourse just ends at that point.
Exactly.
Right.
You literally want to mutilate children. You literally want to dispossess me of my country.
They've lost every aspect of the argument.
Yes.
And the ones who are doubling down, there's not going to be a reconciliation with them until they genuinely repent. And even then, they should never be allowed anywhere near power for like 40, 50 years.
Yeah. They'd have to start tweeting some really racist things for me to forgive them. Furious Dan says, I wonder if Mr. Starmer will recognize a British state or more controversially an English state.
Lol.
Omar says, the Muslims think it's ethical to engage in taqiyya to bring about Islamic rule, and Jews think erecting string around entire cities to fool God is an acceptable bending of the rules. Yeah, I don't understand the Middle East at all, man. It's mad. Like, genuinely mad. And, you know, I'm not even trying to be prejudicial. I'm just like, okay.
It is. Yeah. When you understand it, you sort of change your mind about a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin says, prosperity will help. Yep, with more prosperity, they can buy better weapons. Mm. Which is literally what they did with all the aid money.
And it's like the Palestinian Authority, when it was paying people who killed Israelis, was using mainly European and American funds.
Yes.
Just to be clear about that.
And I really have a personal distaste for like Palestinian men as well, right? Because I can't help but notice they're mostly fat. Mm. I'm not even joking. They're like, oh, look at my starving child. It's like, yeah, but you're fat. How are you fat? Hmm. How are you fat? It's because you're eating all the fucking food, you fat. Sorry, it just annoys me.
That is how calories work. So.
Yeah, I know, right? And so, you know...
The visual aesthetic
reveals
it.
Expert here is like, yeah, no, that checks
difficult
out.
It's difficult to argue. One is thin, one's fat.
Go through the videos and they're like, yeah, look at my starving child, says this fat guy. And I'm like, if my children were starving, I would lose a lot of weight. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I would lose a lot of weight if my children were starving. And those guys, they're not. Ewan says, can't understand why can't the left understand that non-Westerners don't have a family life like we do? Well, yeah, everywhere's different, and for some reason they don't have any conception of that. Tim says, good morning, gentlemen. Just woken up here. It's time for breakfast, and I'll watch the show. Quick question for Firas. On Israel, any chance you can ask Natasha Hausdorff to come on Real Politique? You can have a great discussion about the situation in the Middle East.
I'll reach out.
I don't know who she is.
Frankly, neither do I.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'm sure she's good if she's been recommended by one of our
exactly.
viewers. Jimbo says, all will be forgiven if Farage designates the Home Office as a terrorist organization.
At least the Muslim network in the
Home I mean,
office.
It probably contains a few terrorist organizations.
Yeah,
Sophie. That'd be so funny, man. That's the sort of thing Trump would do. Trump would do. Sophie says, you know, the thing about Farage is that he is narcissistic, attention-seeking posers who yearns for the love of the masses. He is a narcissistic, attention-seeking poser who's salivating for that big Restore England march to praise his name to get that love. By changing the narrative, you can absolutely manipulate this man to suit your agenda.
Yeah,
that's exactly the point.
That's true.
Yeah.
He just wants to be loved in the same way as Trump in many ways. If only he was a little more strong, a bit more of a spine. Like, Nigel should literally be out there every day being like, I'm going to put gunboats in the channel. Look, the boats
the fact
are stopping.
That he managed to deliver Brexit, which wouldn't have happened without him, shows a degree of strength.
Mm.
But he is so infused with liberal ideas that purging himself of that madness is a long and difficult personal journey for him.
Yeah. And he's really afraid of the media. He's afraid of the media. So
because if he gets on their wrong side before his victory... They can, in fact, sideline him permanently.
But he should be sidelining the media.
These days, he's too big.
He should be sidelining the media. Media is not needed in this day and age. It's just not.
He's too old for that, man.
No. But
he'll have young advisors. This is the point.
Yes,
you're right about the media for smaller politicians. But Nigel Farage has a 99.5% name recognition in this country. He's more famous than Keir Starmer is.
He doesn't need him.
Yeah, exactly. He's grown beyond it, and he doesn't understand.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to his courage.
Yeah, David Armes, probably.
Mm. Yeah.
Martin says, good luck to the UK police even finding all of these illegals. Perhaps if they ask the imams very nicely, they might be allowed into the Islamic communities to remove their own. Doubt it. We don't have ICE. Well, promising to make ICE would be...
BDO.
Yeah.
I like the BDO.
All I'm saying, Nigel, is we've got the manpower.
I'll be there.
Hit us up whenever you need it.
All right.
But that's the point, right? He could be making quite bombastic promises.
Like, he could make Tom Homan a citizen and sort of bring him back to Britain.
Tom Homan, your chief advisor.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you need to do? Just get rid of him.
Yeah.
You know, just get him out.
Any means necessary. Just do it.
And
crack on, mate.
But he could be promising, we're going to have the formation of the BDL, who's going to go into these communities, deport the illegals, cut off all the money, gunboats in the channel, borders sealed for 30 years or something, right? Like, no one's coming in or out. Deal with it, you know? Like, you could have that, like, just these bombastic, ridiculous-sounding things, but all the media would be going, Nigel Farage is going to deport everyone down to the fifth generation. And everyone would be like, Nigel Farage is going to deport everyone down to the fifth generation.
Everyone would love
That's
it.
Great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The message would get out, and everyone would love it.
Imagine what would happen to house prices.
Yeah, I know, right?
You just take 5 minutes to think about, 2 minutes, 2 seconds, to think about what happens to NHS waiting lists.
Yep.
What happens to home prices? Mm. What happens to public safety?
Yep.
What happens to crime data?
Yep.
What happens to 60 different things you can think of in 5 minutes that would actually improve?
Migrant communities would hear this and be like, right, okay, they're done with us.
I'm going.
Yeah, exactly. I've had enough.
They would self-expel.
Exactly. They've had enough of us. They're going to cut off the money. It's just going to be really difficult. I'm just going to go home.
Yep.
And millions would just willingly leave if Nigel just came out and was just a bit more hardline. But anyway, Ed Miliband harnessing Enoch Spinning Grave says, great name, things are so bad that some Romanians I know, good ones, find it easier just to fly back than to be treated in the NHS here.
The French people I know do the same thing.
Yeah.
They go to France.
No doubt.
The Germans I know go to Germany.
Yeah. Man of Kent says, the changing attitude in reform is a clear sign that, one, Restore is working, and two, the protests are working also. So keep going. Exactly. We have got to create the environment in which they live and essentially make it unpalatable, as you were saying, for them to be anything less than hard line on immigration. And the British public really has had enough as well. I mean, it's just, you know, decades and decades of surveys and voting for manifestos that are like, oh yeah, we'll get it down to the tens of thousands, blah, blah. No, we're not asking for that anymore.
People want millions gone.
Yeah, exactly. Millions of them have to go.
We don't want thousands coming in.
Raiders.
No, reduction's good enough. It has to be millions going.
Anyway, Chronicle says, he said he won't revoke British citizenship, and by 2029, all of those he's referring to tackling will be protected. Isn't there a contradiction there? Did he say he wouldn't revoke British citizenship?
Well, he said you have to reapply for...
You can make him say it in a year's time.
Exactly.
You can make him say it in a year's time.
Anything that he didn't commit to, we're still here. We're not going anywhere.
No,
in a year's time, we're going to have just changed the system, changed the discourse, so it'll seem ridiculous for Nigel Farage to be like, oh, yeah, no, we wouldn't do that. No, he will. We're going to make him do it.
I think it was, it wasn't Starkey, it was someone else making the argument that the citizenship law of 1982 could be mildly amended to clarify what it means to be able to revoke citizenship in the national interest.
Mm. Mm.
And if that were correctly amended, then the ability to revoke citizenship would be huge. And I speak as someone who would be at risk. Fine.
Yeah, but you're a net taxpayer.
I have been for most years. Last year wasn't great, but, you know.
But the point is, you're not, like, taking loads of money out of the system, right?
No.
So
no.
that's the easiest way to...
I don't live on benefits. I don't live on anybody's handouts. I don't live on charity. I'm a proud man. Please, God, don't put me in that position.
Sure.
But
this is the easiest thing to do. You just be like, okay, well, who's paying taxes? Mm, they can stay. If you've never, you've never been a net contributor to the system, you're gone.
That is what Richard Tice said. Reform will scrap indefinite leave to remain scheme retrospectively. You have to reapply. So unless I'm misunderstanding.
Sure, I mean, he could be more clear, couldn't he? But the point is, hold them to it and force them into this position.
Yeah.
But we are out of time. Nate, where can people find more from you?
Mistake Reviews on Twitter and YouTube, as well as The State of Politics, which is a channel I run with Beau.
All right. Thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you.